Startup Stats, and I'm here today with Devin Soni of Sprayable Energy. How's it going?
Hey guys, it's going fantastic.
So before we jump into how you're involved, let's find out first, what is Sprayable Energy?
Sure. Sprayable Energy is a topical energy spray that you spray on your skin to get the energy you would from coffee or energy drinks. So instead of having, you know, an energy shot or an energy drink, you could just keep this bottle in your pocket, in your bag, and whenever you know, feeling a little tired, you can spray yourself on the neck a couple times, and that'll provide, you know, a similar boost.
So would you consider this like the crack of caffeine?
Yeah, you know, it's actually less of a – so, you know, crack is probably more potent than coffee or energy drinks. Our product is actually meant to be – to give you more of a natural amount of energy. So it's not like a boost and a crash. It's more, you know, sort of natural and organic feeling energy. You kind of feel more awake and less like a zombie like you would after like four Red Bulls. So it's a little different. You know, it's actually focused more on people – that for whatever reason don't like coffee or energy drinks because they might be sensitive or because they don't like the calories or sugars or chemicals or, you know, there's just too much caffeine.
Got it. So in regards to that, is it healthy?
So, you know, we think it's healthier than other energy products because, you know, you don't have any preservatives or, you know, things to like chemicals to make the product taste better because, you know, caffeine tastes pretty terrible and you basically need to put, you know, sugar or cream or, you know, chemicals or preservatives in order to make it taste okay. So, you know, our product gives you, you know, sort of less caffeine, but an effective dose since it's through your skin, and you don't have to have any of that other stuff that you would just to make, you know, caffeine palatable.
Got it. So you guys position it as a healthier alternative to coffee.
Right, a more natural alternative, right.
More natural. In regards to the marketplace, is there competitors to this? I feel like I've seen Sprayable Energy somewhere. I have no idea.
Yeah, so, you know, we're the first topical energy spray. There's some other topical energy products that exist in the market. There's a patch called, you know, Spot Energy. There's a gel. You know, we think our delivery mechanism for a couple of reasons is just better. I mean, I think patches are, you know, personally, yeah, I wouldn't probably want to wear one. So, you know, I think there's precedent of using topical energy products, but we're the first spray out there.
Got it. All right, so we know what the product is. What is your involvement in this product?
Sure, so my co-founder and I founded the company about a year ago. Co-founder's a biochemist who spent much of the time, you know, formulating the product, writing our patent, things like that. I spent most of my time on the marketing and upside. My background is as a VC investor for the past couple of years, so I've been more focused on the marketing and go-to-market stuff.
Okay, and so you just said there were patents. So you guys have patented sprayable caffeine?
Right. So, there, you know, there it's not just like caffeine in a bottle. You know, there's actually a lot of science that goes behind making the product actually be able to go through your skin in a safe and effective way. So we, you know, we spent a lot of last year getting our IP protection in order to be able to, you know, make the product protected and make sure that we can, you know, sort of launch globally without having to worry about a lot of competition.
And so does that mean your co-founder is also responsible for managing the production of this?
So, you know, I think neither of us have really we have a contract manufacturer that's FDA approved that manufactures our product. We sent them the formulation. You know, I think we both share in managing the supply chain aspect of it, which is, you know, getting the product to the customers.
Okay. And so what is that? Well, actually, one thing that popped into my head is, what does it taste like?
No, so you play it on your skin, so you don't really taste
it. Oh, so you don't put it in your mouth. It is only exclusively on your skin.
Yeah, exactly. It would taste terrible if you tasted it because caffeine just by nature tastes terrible.
Got it. And is there a smell?
No, completely odorless.
Odorless energy sprayed onto your body.
Yep.
And you can spray it anywhere.
It's actually better. We recommend that people spray it on their neck. With the research we've done, it's sort of the best, it's kind of the most effective way, the fastest way to kind of get absorbed.
Got it. So
kind of like, you know, like the same place you'd spray fragrance, basically the way we position it.
Did your co-founder approach you and be like, I got this great idea for spraying caffeine onto people's bodies?
No, it's a story that's long enough for another interview, but I actually met him in Antarctica on an expedition vessel. And he was my roommate. He was a teal fellow, taken leave from Harvard. And, you know, we'd both gone on a trip, you know, put on by a mutual friend to Antarctica. So we were basically trapped in this cabin for like 2 weeks together, just got to know each other really well, knew we wanted to work on something together. And this is something that he had kind of been working on already, and we're like, yeah, we just decided to go with it.
Got it. Okay, so you guys both have a history. Well, it sounds like your history is with investing in startups. I'm not sure about his, but.
Yeah, so he kind of took leave from Harvard to do the Thiel Fellowship, and basically was you know this call here, and was basically had started an e-commerce company that I guess he wasn't super confident or just you know for whatever reason decided to not focus on any longer. So we're both looking for sort of more entrepreneurial opportunities.
Got it. So, how much did you guys end up raising on? It was Indiegogo?
So I think that the total number was like $169,800 or something. It changes based on chargebacks, but around $170,000.
And the objective here, so have you guys raised funding or is this your funding?
We haven't raised funding before. We were in this program called Startup Chile, which was $40,000 of equity free capital, which we used to kind of get our get the site out, get our manufacturing ready, and things like that. But that was also equity free, and then we raised this Indiegogo campaign, which is kind of our first round. We're considering whether we raise equity capital down the line, but for now, this is the only funding we have.
And so is the goal after this to sell it all online, or are you looking for distribution partners to have this at 7-Eleven and places like that?
Yeah, so as kind of part of this crowdfunding thing, I think we're approached by like 3,000 distributors in the past like 40 days. So there's been a lot of demand, a lot of international, a lot of domestic. We're starting off online because for us it's a good way to really figure out who our core market is. Figure out, the product does require a bit of education. It's like if you saw it on the shelf, a lot of people would think the first relationship is to spray it in your mouth, for example. So we want to make sure that the people that are buying the product, kind of know the benefits, know why they're buying it. We're starting online, and then also looking at like kind of some direct response kind of stuff. In early 2014, we'll probably take it offline with some tests in various gas stations and convenience stores and places you'd think you'd expect to find energy drinks.
Got it. Okay, so that's in the future. What in regards to getting this process going, what on Kickstarter, it sounds like you did development with Startup Chile, and then you developed the product, and then you started putting together this. Actually, why did you do Indiegogo versus Kickstarter?
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons. We've actually had a relationship with the guys in Indiegogo for a while. They're definitely an interesting platform. Kickstarter actually just doesn't allow any way we'd want to define our product. Kickstarter doesn't allow it. So that's another reason. We
Okay.
looked at both, and we're really happy with Indiegogo, and like literally like half our sales came from just like their mail outs and things like that. So it was pretty awesome.
Okay. Awesome. So, what was the process like? It sounds like it sounds like you're friends with the founders of Indiegogo, so they help promote it.
Yeah, well, I'd met them a couple of times, and they're like, man, you gotta launch on Indiegogo. It's awesome. And I'd backed a bunch of campaigns before and definitely knew the process and had seen kind of the press and scale these, some of the campaigns got. So we really just talked to their reps at first, and I think they got much more engaged as the campaign started being really successful. And I think we hit our initial goal in the first couple hours. We're featuring Good Morning America the day after we launched, and after that, I think it just kind of blew up a bit, and I think they started spending a bit more time helping promote the campaign, which I think they do for any campaign that's doing really well.
So, what other sort of pre-campaign preparation did you perform?
Yeah, so I think we locked ourselves in a room for 2 weeks just to focus on sort of the media stuff. And we had kind of looked in a lot of case studies of companies that done really well, crowdfunding campaigns that done really well in the media. And to be honest, I think the one thing that we probably did well is we were just completely shameless in terms of how we approached the media. I think we used every possible angle we could have ever had to target, emails to people. My background as a venture guy, us meeting in Antarctica, the fact that Ben's like 20, like I think we literally, like looked at every possible article that ever been written about something similar, found like a really great angle and tried to like approach people. And then we also kind of went door to door to like people in the media that, were local to us, and we'd meet them, show them the product, give them samples. Just to try to line up some pretty good media for the day we launched. And we weren't expecting much. I think the day before we launched, we're like, okay, well, I know we have two or three things going. And within the span of a week, I think we had like 1,300 like publications out there talking about us. So that part wasn't expected at all. We were hoping to get something, and that we ended up getting much more than we had kind of.
And so most of the marketing all came from this PR.
Yeah, so I would say that you know, we got a lot of impressions from folks like the Good Morning America thing, and we were on Bloomberg and CNN and E! And Forbes and things like that. And I think that drove a lot of initial attention, but that didn't actually convert into a lot of sales up front. So we had to do a couple of things, a little more creatively get sales, and I think that was actually targeting, you know, individuals, getting our existing backers to kind of share information out. We implemented a pretty aggressive retargeting campaign to drive people that had been to the site once back to the site, did a lot of surveys to figure out why they hadn't backed before and try to address those concerns by redoing our copy a ton. So we did a lot to make sure that, you know, that initial media coverage you got, which didn't really convert into sales, would convert over time into stuff.
You said retargeting. Who are you retargeting? So you had a website?
Well, we actually stuck our retargeting pixel on Indiegogo, and then drove them right back to Indiegogo with offers.
Is that a common strategy?
I don't know. You know, I'm a big fan of retargeting as a person and as like a professional, and I just thought it'd work here. And I don't really know if other campaigns have tried it, but it worked for us pretty well.
Interesting. Do you have any way of monitoring the stats on, you know, how those campaigns converted? Do they give you analytics?
Yeah. So it's not as great. I mean, as if you were like going straight to your website, because you can't get the exact funnel flow. But our estimation is that about, you know, 10 to 15% of our backers, about 400 people, came in through the retargeting campaign.
Got it. So you said 10 or 15% came from there. Less came from PR?
Yeah, it's interesting. So that early PR didn't drive a lot of revenue. The Good Morning America, which we're expecting, which is like, you know, 5 million people watch the thing, Bloomberg, those things didn't increase sales tangibly. There were specific media events. You know, I think we're on like featured in like the front page of Yahoo for some article that drove a lot of sales. You know, there's an article in Fast Company, which drove a lot of revenue. A site called Springwise drove like $10,000 on the first day, like $10,000 of sales just from like that one article, which is like insane. We were not expecting that. But I would say the number one thing that really drove revenue for us was actually being promoted on, you know, various Indiegogo channels. Like, you know, after a while we became, you know, the most popular campaign on Indiegogo for a period of time. And so I think we're on the front page a lot. And I think that drove a lot of referring traffic. And then we were featured in their mailing list, which goes out to a ton of people. And that, you know, drove like 30 grand in like 2 days. It was crazy.
And so you got featured on that mailing list through being connected to them?
No. Yeah, I think it's completely algorithm driven. It's based on, you know, the campaigns that are most, you know, driving the most velocity. Right? Yeah, I don't know the exact, they don't share what the metrics are, but they I think they have something called a go-go factor, which is basically some algorithm they use to basically determine what are the most popular campaigns at that time.
So did that happen before or after you had already started your retargeting campaign?
After. So that was, you know, the featuring really ended up in the last 2 weeks. We started our retargeting like day four, but, you know, the way retargeting works is you need to get, you know, some sufficient mass of people have visit your site, like, you know, just call it 10,000 people, and then you can continue, you can market to them.
Did you do any paid advertising outside of that to get your
original? Yeah, so ads? We did, you know, some Facebook and Google ads. We tried some sponsored tweets. Sponsored tweets didn't really do much for us. The Facebook ads drove some traffic. You know, and unfortunately, it was really hard. I think we probably drove $2,000 to $3,000 in sales and probably spent $400 on advertising. So it was a great ROI from that perspective, but it wasn't like a big needle mover for us. And, you know, and unfortunately, we just didn't have time to optimize it. It was one of those things where we kind of blown away by the number of emails we got, where we were just like focusing on like customer support as opposed to anything else.
And so the largest number of sales came directly from this Indiegogo mailing list?
The main mailing list and being featured on the front page and, you know, being the most popular campaign, I think that really drove probably, I would say, half of our sales. I'm still sort of doing a little bit of the math now, and I'll have more data, but like for now, I think it's about half of our sales.
Okay. Were there any other channels that you used aside from PR? You said existing backers. What were you doing with the existing backers?
Yeah, so we were incentivizing people in different ways to share. You know, for example, we had some sample units of the product. You know, we had like 50 just that we'd kind of gotten made for a manufacturer. So we offered, you know, people that shared the campaign with people, you know, we'd like express mail them a bottle like that week. That actually ended up doing really well. So, you know, instead of waiting 3 months like everyone else, you actually get incentivized by getting product early.
Interesting.
So that one worked pretty well. You know, we of course did everything that other people do, you know, shared things on their own Facebook, email everyone I knew. We had a launch party which drove about $11,000 of sales. So that was like a pre event. We kind of want to get all our friends in a room together, and you know, because our product is sort of unique in the sense that it's kind of like, all right, what is this? We wanted people that we wanted to reach out to actually try the product. So we had people like, you know, sampling the product, so that when we did ask them to share and did ask them to contribute or whatever, they'd actually have tried the thing, as opposed to, you know, just seeing something like, you know, in the cloud that you haven't really seen before.
How much did the party cost to throw, though?
About $3,000. We ended up getting a lot of friends. You know, we had like people volunteer office space, and you know, we kind of had lots of friends and family that chipped in to like do the catering and stuff like that. So it didn't cost us very much.
Got it.
I mean, $3,000 isn't nothing, but you know, relative to what it raised.
Okay. So we got PR, which you did outreach. That was basically right at the beginning of the launch. We have retargeting campaigns. Homepage of Indiegogo, Indiegogo mailing list, Facebook and Google ads, sharing stuff directly, and I'm assuming encouraging other people to share, and then a launch party. Was there anything else that you did for the marketing?
Yeah, the one thing that actually did really well was we had this kind of concept of like having secret perks, and these were basically things that weren't listed on our actual Indiegogo page, but we would send to specific people based on you know, whether they had done something like whether they were a friend or family or they're like a VIP or like a media person or you know, someone that already backed the campaign. We just sent them a list like a page where they need a password to get to that we gave them and said, look, you know, and these were like different colored bottles or you know, even bigger discounts. So to get people to kind of feel like they were part of the team and a little exclusive, we, you know, had these specific things up there for like a week. And that probably helped us drive about $15,000 or $20,000 of sales as well, just sales of these secret perks.
How did you, so where do you display those secret perks?
So they were on our website on a password protected page. And then, I mean, so administratively, it ended up being kind of a pain in the ass. Like it took us several
Yeah.
hours because what you have to do, what we ask people to do is, select no perk on Indiegogo, and we had a unique price point for each perk that didn't correspond to any other price point of one of our perks. So if
Got
someone,
it.
you know, donated like $41, we knew that was corresponded to a specific perk, and
Okay.
these spreadsheets like, you know, kind of tie that in, and it worked fine, and it's going fine.
So you put an arbitrary sort of, did you specify what that price point was for? You were like, you get nothing.
No, it was like $41 for, you know, three bottles and a t-shirt and whatever versus, you know, the price point on Indiegogo might have been $45 for a normal color versus like $41 for a discount with like a gold bottle, for example.
But the purchase still went through Indiegogo.
Yeah, it just went through Indiegogo, exactly.
Okay.
And one other thing actually that I think worked okay, didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'll
That's
toss
fine.
this in, was at the launch party, one of the things we did was instead of actually saying like, you know, here, you know, we also want to pre-sell product at the party. I think, you know, 8,000, 11,000 people like pre-buying product. And instead of like having people walk around being like, hey, you know, pay on Indiegogo, we actually just did it all through Square Readers and then did the contribution on our own end through Indiegogo. So
Got it.
we had our own, you know, it had our own, our business account linked to it. We got made $8,000. We, you know, we bit the bullet to pay the Indiegogo fee in addition to the Square fee. But that, you know, I think that facilitated, sales of the party much better because people could walk around the phone versus like a laptop with like, hey, you know, log into your Indiegogo account.
Did you need, in order to apply all those pledges, can one person purchase more than one of the same thing?
Yeah, they can.
So you just went on and did a bulk buy of one of
Right. So
the.
we just actually what we did was we created our own perk tier called Launch Party Perk with one availability. We just bought it, which is the amount that we had raised, and that.
Ah, okay, got it. So in regards to, so that was before you even launched the campaign, you already had purchases.
Yeah, so we had about $11,000 of our $15,000 goal before we launched to the public.
And do you think that that helped accelerate the volume of people that were making pledges, that there was this sort of social proof that someone had already
Oh,
made a commitment?
absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of the data I've seen shows that, you know, once campaigns are A above 30% and B above 75%, they end up accelerating a bit more and people feel, you know, especially people you don't know, trust those metrics a bit better, trust the campaign a bit better. And, you know, secondly, like all our day two plus media was able to say that, hey, this campaign already hit their goal in 24 hours. And you know, so I think it also goes from a media outlet covering a product that may not exist and them still are feeling liable if the product, like, they help, you know, some fraudulent product or something. If they see, like, the fact that a campaign's already successful, already gotten a lot of sales, I think they feel more comfortable writing about it as well, which is when we're talking to the Wall Street Journal, they're like, you know, we don't want to be seen as kingmakers. We don't want to like support something and be the reason that it succeeds. We want to cover things that have already succeeded. So the fact that we were, you know, already hit our goal, I think gave ease to a lot of people in both buying and writing about the product.
Got it. Now you said these stats, 30% and 70%, that's just coming directly from Indiegogo on this information, or where were you reading
the 30 and 70? You're talking about the how much they contribute, how much? Oh, so yeah, that was something. Indiegogo provides all the people that apply in campaigns with like a bunch of just data sheets on like best practices. And one of the data points I'd seen was once a campaign hits, you know, 30% of the goal, it accelerates significantly. The 75%, I remember reading, so don't like quote me as gospel on this one. I did a lot of research on like other campaigns, and I remember reading it like on a YC post about some Kickstarter campaign that said like the data showed that once it hit 75% it accelerates, but 30% is from Indiegogo.
Got it. Okay, cool. So it sounds like we've hit on absolutely all of the marketing aspects that you guys have used in order to make this a success.
Yeah, I think it was pretty efficient.
And in regards to this whole marketing process, was that what you were spending all of your time during the campaign on, was simply the campaign?
Unfortunately, we spent zero time doing anything except responding to email. For like the first, we had to like hire three people just to hand our email. And we woke up the first day with like, you know, 1,100 emails in our inbox. You know, some people with questions about the product, some people wanting to distribute. So we were not expecting that in any way, shape, or form. We didn't have, you know, email systems in place to handle that. We eventually switched to a service called, you know, Help Scout, which significantly facilitated the process. So the first week was like writing templates for all the emails we got. And then afterwards, I mean, I think we were just on TV interviews like all day, every day, right? We were like jumping every time like Good Morning America called, Bloomberg called. We're like, okay, well, yeah, sure, we'll drive 4 hours to, you know, be on this radio show. And you know, I don't necessarily know how well it worked, but I mean, I think that's just kind of the process we ran, was we were very open with the media and stuff like that.
And you said Help Scout?
Yeah, it was the service I used, which basically lets you, it's kind of a little different than Zendesk, because you actually send emails from your own email address versus like, I think Zendesk, you have to use their like, you know, weird protocol.
Okay. And so that enabled a group of people to be managing all of the inbounds.
Yeah, it helped. Like, it enabled like four people to manage the contact at, you know, sprayable.co email list, and it enabled us to create templates that we could just, you know, one click push. If someone asked, "Do we do international shipping?" we could just like push a button, as opposed to like writing some, you know, which is, you know, very common protocol that a lot of software uses, but we just use Help Scout.
Okay, and I'm just thinking about this. Of this tool that you're describing. So I guess we won't dwell on that, but did it enable the templated emails to be sent out, or you went and developed that yourself using like Tout or something like that?
No, it enabled the templated emails to be sent.
Got it. So Help Scout is the one to check out.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I think it's like $5 user per month or something is what we were paying.
Cool. All right, so I think we hit on all of that. We found out who your team is. In regards to the manufacturing now, what you're probably in the midst of that?
Right, exactly. So we had locked down our manufacturer and our bottler and our bottle maker. We had basically locked down everything except our little external pack before we launched the campaign. And we were just like, you know, we'll place the PO once we know how much to order. And, you know, once we got to a point where we're like, there's an inflection point in the unit volume, which I think comes at like 20,000 units or something, we're like, okay, we'll just place an order for this. That was like mid campaign, because it takes, you know, 6 to 8 weeks to fill. So now, you know, the bottles I think are being air shipped today to the manufacturer, and it'll have the product ready in a couple weeks.
Awesome. Where did you find the manufacturer?
That was the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. It was so many difficult phone calls with people, us asking stupid questions because we've never done this before. I mean, I think we contacted like 400 people. Sent them like data about the product, and like, you know, we have sort of a unique product that doesn't really fit in. It's not like it's not a dietary supplement, like it's not an energy shot, not a perfume, it's not a drug. So it's kind of like this weird thing. We had to find someone that was willing to work with us and our lawyers on, you know, a way to, you know, certify the product, label the product that, you know, was in line with like regulations. So yeah, I think we talked to like 200 people. We went down the process of like 5 or 10. You know, every time it'd be like something would fall apart. I mean, that's why you know, it took us like a year to get launched instead of like 6 months, was just finding a good manufacturing partner. We finally found one in New York that is awesome, and we're super excited to be working with.
Awesome. So you found them in New York. You used the Yellow Pages.
The internet. I mean, the Google, basically. The hard part was, like, first we didn't know what to search for. We're like, oh, liquid manufacturer, right? And then we start talking to people, and they're like, oh, we want a FDA registered, small vial product manufacturer, whatever. Once you figure out the search terms, we started finding more names, and then we just contacted those people with, like, a packet that we had developed based on all the idiocy, like, that we'd done before, of, like, not answering the right questions for people and drawing up the quote process.
So you said that was a 6-month process finding the manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're on to the process of finding the manufacturer of the packaging.
Oh no, we've already found that. That was the only thing we didn't have lined up when we launched the campaign.
Okay.
We lined that up, like, a couple weeks ago, and that's something that takes 2 weeks. It's not it's just, like, getting the right price point and things like that. So.
Awesome. So, I mean, it sounds like you're good to go. What's the so now sky's the limit?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think we it should be an exciting time once we launch. We'll actually have product in a couple of months. So the burden's on us to, like, actually build the business now. So we're focused on expanding aggressively internationally. We're talking to some online resellers. We're also talking to people to do test runs of the product. So I think we'll have our hands pretty full once we finish the fulfillment aspect in the next couple of weeks.
Awesome. So if people want to find out more about your product, where do they go?
Our website is sprayable.co. It's not COM, it's just sprayable.co. And you can pre-order some product there as well, just learn more about it, learn more about us, the co-founders. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to chat, and feel free to reach out if you have any other questions.
Will do.
All right, cheers.